This is Morning Edition from NHPR. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is the New Hampshire News Recap. Jurors awarded David Meehan $38 million last year for abuse he endured at the state's former Youth Development Center. The legal fight over whether the state will pay that full amount, though, has reached New Hampshire's Supreme Court. NHPR's Anne-Marie Timmons has been following the case and joins us now. Good morning, Anne-Marie.
Good morning, Rick.
First, how did we get here? You know, a jury decided the state should pay Meehan the $38 million. A judge reduced the amount to just under $500,000, and now the Supreme Court is taking up the case.
Right. This is the, you know, we've had YDC-related headlines in the news for a long time now, but this is the first case to go to trial, the first lawsuit to go to trial. So it's something of a test case. And so you're right, the jury, they deliberated for just three hours and handed down this $38 million verdict, but it was a question on their verdict form that has brought us to where we are now. The last question said, how many incidents of abuse, I'm paraphrasing, I'm making it more simple than it was, had Meehan proven? And jurors wrote one. And state law limits the state's civil liability to $475,000 per incident, which gets us to the number you mentioned. And the state cited that law when it said, we are challenging the $38 million verdict because the jury found there was one incident. And the judge agreed, but did so reluctantly. And then after that, one juror did come forward and said they had misunderstood that question. And when they wrote one, they meant Meehan's single diagnosis of PTSD that was caused by hundreds of rapes. And the judge himself seemed sympathetic to that argument, and he said it was impossible to square a $38 million verdict with one incident of abuse, but said the law really required him to apply the cap.
And this, the outcome of this case will not only affect Meehan, but the many other survivors with pending lawsuits against the state for abuse at the center. What's at stake here for everyone?
Quite a lot, both in terms of the state and the survivors of this abuse. It will come down to, I think, how the court defines incident. Is it each rape, or is it, as the state is arguing, a single security failure that leads to an atmosphere where you can have hundreds of rapes? And so whatever the court decides there, I think could be precedent setting in how we see these other hundreds of lawsuits play out. And there was one question that really struck me from the court, from the justices Thursday during oral arguments. Justice Patrick Donovan hinted at this what's to come question. He said, should we consider whether or not this ruling in this particular case is an indication that the state's going to be bankrupt by the YDC process? And the state said the answer to that is yes.
The state Supreme Court did hear oral arguments yesterday. What argument is the state making, though, besides that? They're saying that this could bankrupt the state? Is that their essential argument?
They didn't argue that, but they agreed with it. But a similar argument. They said, you know, you can't count each rape. There's one security failure. Did we hire the wrong people? Did we not enforce the rules that we had in place? Each of those is one incident, not the rapes that follow or the beatings that follow. The other argument they made is that the court cannot lift the cap because it feels that's the right answer, because doing so would really overstep the right of the legislature to decide how money is spent, and it would violate the separation of powers in the state's argument. And so where we'll end up, I don't know. It's one of those cases where it was lots of legal arguments. We'll see what shakes out in the end, but that was another one of the state's arguments.
What's Meehan's attorney saying?
They said, you know, if you're really going to construe one incident of security failure equals 100 plus, 200 plus rapes and beatings, that really takes the humanity away from a victim. That's the word they used. And they said it can't possibly be what the legislature intended.
Let's turn to some of your other reporting from this week, Anne-Marie. The Trump administration has dismantled the U.S. Department of Education and its special education offices. What effect could that have on programs here in New Hampshire?
You know, as I've talked to parents and educators and advocates, the fear is that the answer to that is they don't know, and it could be anything. And we've seen this play out across issues since under this administration. There's so much that's unknown that it's hard to know what to be afraid of and what to be prepared for. And so one thing we know is that the layoffs really dismantled the whole Department of Education, but in particular, the offices that handle special education funding that goes to the state, but also enforces the law, you know, special education protections, disability protections. And so if there aren't people in that office, what happens when the law is not followed? So it's mostly fear right now.
Sure, fear of where you would turn if you needed to. What have you heard from parents of kids with special needs that are kind of dealing with that fear? What are they saying?
There was one student, and readers or listeners should go back and find this story. A senior from Exeter High School, her name is Angelina Leo. She's become a real outspoken advocate for the services that she's had. She has received services in schools since fourth grade for both physical and learning disabilities. And she said, those services allow me to graduate this year. It allows me to consider going to community college after that. And her argument is, if the world is not going to adapt to people with disabilities, then we have to have these services so that we can do what we need to do to fit into the world. And some version of that I've heard from parents and other students, too.
What's been the response from New Hampshire representatives and political leaders?
We've seen the most from Senator Maggie Hassan, who talks openly about her son receiving services when he was in school to be able to participate in public education. And she came this week and talked with parents and teachers, and Angelina Leo was there as well. And just about, you know, the deal that she helped broker to reopen the government does require those positions to be rehired. Those workers have to come back. But that's only until January. So it's a very short-term reassurance. And so she really wanted to hear, you know, what's on the minds of people here in New Hampshire who are going to be impacted by these decisions going forward.
Yeah. Has this become a very partisan issue, Anne-Marie?
I asked her that because certainly, as she says, disability does not know party lines. The best I could get as an answer is it's not a party line issue, but one side is speaking out more about it than the other.
NHPR's Anne-Marie Timmons, thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
You can find more of her work, by the way, at our website. It's nhpr.org. New Hampshire's education system is facing budgetary challenges, from grade schools to universities and colleges. The New Hampshire Bulletin's Ethan DeWitt joins us now over Zoom to talk about some of the ways these institutions have been working to bridge gaps in funding. Good morning, Ethan.
Good morning.
Okay, first, let's talk about what's causing these budget issues. What are some of the factors at play here?
Sure. So they span a wide range. For K-12 schools, the declining enrollment is something that has been occurring over the last two decades, really. The early 2000s was the high watermark for the number of kids in schools. And every year since, I think about 2002, there's been less enrollment every year. So that creates a budget crunch on its own. Then there's some specific district level issues, like there's school care, the kind of health provider for a lot of these districts had an increase in premiums. So a lot of districts are seeing kind of fiscal holes there. And on the college and university side, enrollment is also a big problem long term. It kind of is downstream of fewer kids going to K-12 schools. And it also corresponds with, high tuition in the university system of New Hampshire. And at the same time, the university system this year is facing a $35 million cut. That's about 17.6% over the next 2 years that was imposed by the legislature. So they're being rocked by long-term trends and also kind of short-term funding challenges.
Yeah, it seems like kind of a perfect storm of factors there. Now, you mentioned declining enrollment. It is an issue for schools all across the country, not just here in New Hampshire, but we are an aging state. How are school leaders addressing that specifically?
Well, so some it depends on the school district. Some of them are focusing on kind of more immediate fiscal crises. Perhaps you've heard of the situation happening in Claremont. That is very unique to Claremont. And then there are others who are kind of looking ahead to this problem. And one particular school district is taking a lot of attention this year. and that is Prospect Mountain in Alton. And they have set up what is called open enrollment. This was a 2009 law that legislators passed and was never really taken advantage of until about 2022, 2023. And it allows a school district to accept kids from all over the state. And with it, they get tuition payments from the school district where that student resides. And so this had not been used until Prospect Mountain got involved, and the state Supreme Court weighed in this year and essentially validated that approach. And Prospect Mountain argues that this is an important tool to fight that declining enrollment. It's created a big ripple effect. Have been multiple school districts that have taken legal issue with it, but it appears that this is going to be sort of the standard that is set. And we are now seeing some school districts weighing the possibility of joining Prospect Mountain and also becoming an open enrollment.
Yeah, that has all kinds of implications, of course. Now, you mentioned the Claremont School District, Ethan, facing that extreme budget crisis with a deficit of about $5 million, so much so that state lawmakers have considered a loan to help bail them out. What's the latest proposal from the state on that?
Sure. So the Senate committee looking at this said that they would set aside a loan program. Now, this still has to get approved by the full Senate and it has to get approved by the full House. But there are some strings attached. So this would be a revolving loan program. It would essentially allow Claremont early access to the adequacy payments that the state pays about every quarter to the state. They would get their payments into the next few years that they would have to pay back at interest. So that's one of the strings attached. They'd be paying it back at the interest that's set by the New York Federal Reserve. That's about 3.88% right now. This would be about 75% of the money that they would expect to receive. And if they did receive it, they would have to agree to submit to a financial and performance audit performed by the state. They would also need to put on the ballot at the next school meeting a measure asking voters whether they would like to impose a tax cap moving forward. And all parents in the Claremont School District who wanted access to an education freedom account, these are the vouchers that allow you to go to private school or homeschool, would be allowed to access that despite the cap being met this year. So there are a few conditions, but it seems apparent that Claremont will take advantage of this, whatever final form it takes.
Okay, so just we do the last 30 seconds we have here, Ethan. What's at stake here for Claremont if the state doesn't pull through with this?
Well, Claremont has a loan that it got from the Claremont Savings Bank that lasts it through April. After that, there is simply no money to continue operations. So it would be pretty dire if there were no loan available to it in April.
The New Hampshire Bulletin's Ethan DeWitt. Thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us, Ethan.
Thanks for having me.
You can find more of his work, by the way, at NewHampshireBulletin.com. And we're taking next Friday off with a Thanksgiving holiday, but we're back in 2 weeks with more top headlines, of course. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is NHPR.